Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into this podcast. With me today is my good friend, Jill Seiler. Jill, you are an amazing, amazing superintendent down in Texas. And I will tell you, I stand in awe of the things that you're doing, the things that I see coming out of your district. So can you just take a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. And it's so great to be with you, Tom. I appreciate your kind words. You know, I was just sharing with you before the show started, you know, I've led through some things as a superintendent, but this has been unlike anything I've ever led through. I'm Jill Seiler. I'm the superintendent of Gunner ISD. We're a small district just north of the Metroplex in Dallas. We have 1,000 students and happy to be here today.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing part of your story already. And listen, you know, out there, I think people just need hope. So when you think about your work as an educational leader, your work as a superintendent, what's something that right now gives you hope in our world?
Yeah, so I'll say it in this context that I would never wish for this to happen, from the sickness to what our first line, you know, health providers and all of them are facing. I would never have chosen this. I certainly wouldn't have chosen this for my teachers either. What they've had to go through, I don't know if you've seen online, but Ken Buck, he's a school board member in South Carolina, and he shared this blog talking about what we've asked teachers to do is just miraculous, and I truly believe that. But what gives me hope, Tom, is what they've been able to do. Like, the same things that made them incredible teachers in the classroom are the same things that they're doing online. But the work that they've had to do to make that come to fruition for our students has been nothing short of miraculous, and they've done it. So I'm hopeful because of just the spirit that I see every day in my teachers, the rest of the world is getting to see across our nation. I'm hopeful for what's to come. You know, we will not be the same after this. And, you know, that's going to take a lot of thought down the road as to what that reentry looks like. I'm super hopeful just because of the work that my teachers have done.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I mean, give me another profession that in many places was asked to completely overhaul what they do from Friday to the following Monday, but yet educators still continue to step up to the plate. Now, Jill, as a superintendent, you have so many things that you're overseeing, so many pieces that when this hit, when places started to close, that you've had to balance. Talk to us a little bit, if you would, about some of the major obstacles that you all have dealt with and just be real with that. But at the same time, what are some of the pieces that you've worked to really try and overcome them for the benefit of your kids in your community?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing for us, you know, in Texas especially, we have over 1,000 school districts. And so the majority of them are small districts like myself. And so with that, yes, we have less kids, but it's the same system work. It's the same kind of work, no matter where you're at. There's just a whole lot less people doing that. We're a small district. We were not one-to-one. We were not particularly tech savvy. We had great things with technology happening in pockets across our district, but we were in no way, shape, or form prepared for this. And so our biggest challenge was, you know, as soon as I really got a grasp of, hey, this isn't a short-term 14-day closure because we want to make sure everyone's good after spring break and their travels, this could be a long-term closure. That really changed my thinking about how do I get ready to deliver instruction in a viable way for the long-term. So for us, that meant recognizing our shortcomings and realizing that we're not going to get there overnight, and it would be inappropriate for us to try to do that. And so we closed school for a week. No kids, no activity. Like, hey, I just need some time with my teachers. Started layering in professional development, started getting a plan in for phase one, which was low tech. We knew we could not jump to high tech for a number of reasons, which I'll talk about. But how do I do that in a way where I'm not overwhelming teachers, but preparing them over time? And then we rolled out our low tech phase. You know, if you can imagine just massive materials distribution, we deployed every technology device that we had. And then over that next week, while kids had their paper, pencil, book materials to work with, continue to lay in professional development so that we could get ready to transition to a high-tech model. So we're now in week two of high-tech, and our kids are doing great, but man, it's been a lot of work along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And kudos to teachers. Tell us a little bit, dive a little bit more into some of the learning experiences. I see you sharing out on social media just some of the great things happening in your district. So what are some of the learning types of experiences that your kids are able to do right now? Because your teachers, maybe they're just thinking differently and seizing the day to say, hey, we're going to make the best of these opportunities for our kids.
Well, one thing we spent a lot of time thinking about, too, actually, is one, just how do we want to do the learning, right? There's huge advantages to synchronous learning where teachers and students come together, learn at the same time. And we wanted that to be a part of the work that we did, but we also knew that not all families had the same schedule. Not all families were going to have parents at home to be able to help, especially our younger students, do that. So we also wanted asynchronous learning where we were posting the learning for our kids to get whenever they could, be that night or weekends with their parents. So we wanted that mixture, a place for them to get community and connection, but also that ability to do the work on their own. So that's a big piece of our model. The second thing that we looked at was just what makes the most sense for our kids. We are a big user of Google Classroom, and I love Google Classroom. But when you are working, especially with middle school students who are still on that younger side, and they're having, you know, 6 to 8 class periods of trying to maneuver, okay, let me click into this class and figure out what to do, and then click into this class and figure out what to do. We wanted a single point of entrance. We modeled our online learning platform off of the American School in Japan and really liked how they had this just single point of entry. As a fifth grade student, I could click in one place for Monday and figure out in math, here's what I need to do. And in reading, here's what I need to do. And then within that, there's so much capacity. And so the training we did with our teachers was to show them how to open their own YouTube channel, how to create videos of themselves teaching content, how to do screencasting. And again, tiny bits day after day, just layering that professional development. It really changed the way that that we look at professional development. It was always kind of like, hey, we're going to do this full day of PD, or we're going to do this full class. This was a, hey, today's challenge is this 10-minute thing that I need you to learn and conquer. In tomorrow's challenge, we're going to take one more thing, and we continue to do that over time till we have the skills where they could really do the things that we're going to engage students well.
Yeah, when we think about that professional learning and those moments, it must have had such a different feel, just being that, like, this is real and we're starting this next week. So this isn't a, let's do this nicely over the year, we'll take our time, we'll ease it in. Like, nope, there's no time for that. We got to roll, we got to go. And so kudos for you as well. And just hearing that you shut down to really take that time to support teachers, because, you know, not every place had that. And you were able to say, hey, we're going to really work with our teachers here to ultimately pause and then give our kids a great experience. And, you know, one of the things that I really respect that you just talked about is how you saw the differences in your families right away and understood that some of them would need a different approach. And really, that's the heart of equity when we look at it from a future ready end. So talk to us about how do you support, and how are other districts even in your area really working to support some of our most traditionally marginalized groups, or, you know, those that are very low SES, or, you know, those groups of students that are on our radar that are really most in need. How are we prioritizing what it is we're doing for them, and what does that look like in your area?
Yeah, so we had some baseline data to go with. We knew that about a third of our district didn't have internet connectivity. But the very first thing that we did, you know, as we were working with our teachers, was to put together kind of a script for them, just to, we wanted every single child in our district contacted personally by one of our teachers. And of course, not only to gather information, do you have internet and those sorts of things, what devices do you have, but also just to make sure that they knew that we cared about them and we were checking in. But to really dig in, this was more than a, hey, do you have access to the internet? It was, tell us about your internet connectivity. Is it a data plan on a cell phone, or do you have actual internet that multiple devices can get on in your family? It wasn't a, do you have a device? It was, tell us, what devices do you have? Do you have enough for every single child in your family? Then we used that information over and over again to deploy what we needed to deploy. We immediately ordered internet hotspots to deliver to students. But, you know, even Tom, with that, it's been a learning curve for us. What we thought, you know, what some families thought was okay in terms of their internet connectivity, when we started to really roll out our online learning, we realized that with an entire family home, and many times including mom and dad, and they're all on devices, they're all using it, it wasn't enough. And so we really had to just be mindful, continue seeking feedback from our families, and then trying to meet those needs as they go. The other piece I would say is that our food services has been absolutely critical. You know, one of the, again, this whole situation has been tragic, but one of the things that it has brought to light is just the critical roles that schools play in their communities. And we all know this. We see it on Friday nights as the whole community comes together, but to see it up close when I have family after family emailing, just saying thank you for still finding a way to deliver food. And so we've done a lot of that, obviously daily meals, but also looking at grocery distribution and just trying to meet basic needs.
Yeah. You know, and you're just hitting so many key points there. And I love your points around equity in that work and even around connectivity. You know, I think we make a lot of assumptions as school and district leaders, or we have, they have connectivity. They have an internet service provider, check it off. But now we've got maybe mom and dad and two kids streaming and they've got two or three devices. And so, yeah, that flexibility there is really, really key. You know, Jill, fear is real. And we look at the news, we look at the apps, we see things online, we see, you know, the results continuing to go up for COVID-19 and, you know, and those kinds of things. How do you, as a leader, you know, you have teachers, principals, your community, your kids, they look up to you and you've got so much on your shoulders as a superintendent. How is it that you wade through even your own fear really to overcome it and remain that sense of calm in the midst of chaos?
So I'll say, you know, one of the most challenging pieces of leadership is that communication piece. My job, my duty is to communicate in such a way that shares, yes, absolutely, here's the truth, here's the reality of what we're facing, but in the same breath to also communicate hope and confidence that we are going to get through this and we're going to get through this together. And so I take that very seriously. And every time we communicate, I want them to hear my voice. I want them to hear that authenticity, that vulnerability within me, that I understand what they're going through is difficult, but we can and will get through this together, and we're going to partner with you every step of the way. I'll also say though, Tom, I mean, that's the outside, my job to convey that. But personally, as a leader, I think it's also important to recognize that that fear is real. You know, even though what people see on the outside is this very calm, cool, and collected Jill, there's that internal that, yeah, I'm watching CNN at 10 p.m. Just looking at the numbers and thinking to myself, you know, how is this really going to impact those that I love? And so I think as a leader, it's just distilling that, yes, that's a piece of us. I think Brené Brown has done amazing work around helping leaders see that that vulnerability can be such a powerful part of our leadership. And then finding that line between what are the pieces that we need to be vulnerable with, because this is a really big, fearful time for us. But at the same respect, also knowing that my role as a leader is to speak that confidence into others.
Yeah, so well said. Vulnerability is key. And, you know, well, thinking about internally and thinking about you, you are somebody that you haven't stopped working since this pandemic has begun. You are constantly taking care of your teachers. You're taking care of your principals. You're taking care of your community. You're taking care of families. How do you, as a superintendent, in the midst of a crisis, take care of yourself?
So I don't know that I've done a super great job. I'm not sure that I'm your best role model for this. You know, my husband, he works in grocery, and even though he's not in the health profession, he is absolutely front lines in terms of just providing the basic necessities for people. And his work has been unbelievably, I mean, he's just been at work a ton. In my work for the first few weeks has been crazy, just long hours, unlike anything I've ever experienced. And so we have two kids at the house. They're trying to learn. I have one who's super independent and one who is not so independent. And so part of this is just realizing that you've got to give yourself grace too. Like, yes, we may not do everything we need to do on the school side for these 14 days while I'm really trying to get the district into a place where we're, you know, steady and rolling. And then when the time is right, we're going to dig in and do that. And so my job is just to make sure that their needs are met, that I'm meeting my needs personally, trying to get good sleep. I'm not even going to say I'm trying to eat well, because if I were to show you my drawer, you'd see the M&Ms over here and probably a Coke over there. But I think just making sure that my family knows that they're loved and cared for. And some of those things, when we can deal with school, we can. And we're back on track and we're doing well. But it's that giving grace and understanding, hey, this is a short season. And we're going to be able to meet those needs down the road, too.
Yeah, so well said. And a shout out to your husband for being the front lines, as well as our doctors and nurses and farmers and those that are continuing to keep things going in our emergency situation here. Jill, one thing I love about your work and about you as a leader is you are just so proud of your team. You're so proud of your district. So tell us for just a moment, what's something that makes you incredibly proud right now that you see people doing in your district? Talk to us about that.
I think the thing that I'm most proud about is just that personal connection. my teachers, you know, they love their kids. And so like even this week, yesterday, my elementary teachers rolled out one of those videos where they were all holding signs, sharing a message of love for their kids. Today, we're doing the elementary parade at, you know, this afternoon where they're going to drive through the neighborhoods and just share with their kids. But, you know, I work with a very incredibly seasoned staff. And, you know, while I shared that the technology was not necessarily their level of comfort, but they recognized that this was not just about pushing out content, that they needed to learn these skills in order to connect with their kids. So when I see some of the teachers that I know that technology is not their their best friend, learning it so that they can put out daily YouTube videos to their kids doing read alouds and connecting because they know that that is important, that they need to see their face. That to me makes me just so incredibly proud. And that's across the district K-12. But I'm so thankful for the staff that we have that just recognizes that it doesn't matter what our comfort levels are, we have to do what's required in order to meet our kids' needs, and they're doing it so well.
Vulnerability, taking care of people, shifting our mindsets and doing whatever it takes. Jill Seiler, everybody, appreciate your time today, Jill. Keep leading the way, and thanks for being here.
That's great. Thank you so much, Tom.